number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Leg it down. Smack him. Yeah.
Nighttime is the right time. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio.
Is now.
Oh, got to be.
This is what we do.
From the Quick and Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
What is that old saying? Heavy is the head that wears the crown? You want it all, you get it all, but then you get all of the blame and you get all the scrutiny when you don't deliver it all. Chip Kelly has been fired as the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. Look, I love boldness. So I welcomed Chip Kelly into the NFL. I didn't care if his scheme worked. I wasn't arrogant to believe and to make judgments immediately. I sat back and said, we'll see. He wants to do things up-tempo? Okay. Wants to throw in a little spread, a little wrinkle into what was already in the NFL? Okay. He wants to take players and toss them around like trading cards? Okay. We'll see. This is the end result. You want all the power? You get all the power. You want the crown? You get the crown. But when it's time to make a change, you're the first one that's going to roll. And so the Eagles didn't even wait till Black Monday. The Eagles made a statement today. Before the new year, before the final game of the season, Chip Kelly's out. And Chip Kelly's out because of Chip Kelly. Nothing more. Not execution. Because of Chip Kelly. He made a lot of mistakes coming into this league. One of the mistakes that he made was he wanted everything. And that can be very dangerous. And now listen, I don't mind if you are a coach that can do it and you can show that you can do it, fine. Personally, I like it when you have some sort of accountability. When there is somebody that is willing to, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to keep it like this. You coach the players, I deliver you the players. Kelly said time and time again, I am not the general manager. He was right. He wasn't the general manager. But he did have power over personnel. So that's like being a general manager. But those were semantics. You know? Those were things you say that drive people crazy in arguments. You're the general manager. Well, I'm not the general manager. Okay, it's not on your business card. But you're kind of the general manager. No, but still. You know. Chip Kelly's offense was too fast. It didn't give his defense enough time to relax, take a break. You're hearing that a lot today. But again, I like boldness. I listen, the one thing that I've respected about Chip Kelly since his arrival in the NFL is nothing more than this. He has gotten an opportunity that a lot of coaches don't get to do. He got to do this exactly the way he wanted. And he took the punishment for it. And it's justifiable. Absolutely. The Eagles are a mess. And none of his ideas worked. And trading away players now starts to look like they look a little bit more differently than just personnel moves. Right? DeSean Jackson is gone. Who did you replace him with? Right? You got rid of players because of salary cap reasons and then and brought in other players and filled the salary cap again. DeMarco Murray didn't work out. You got rid of LeSean McCoy. No problems there. Brought in Kiko Alonso. It looked like a deal that seemed to work on both sides. Alonso hadn't done anything and DeMarco Murray didn't do anything. And it's not just execution. It's Chip Kelly. And you can't, in this day and age, especially in a media market like Philadelphia, you under no circumstances can throw out liners just to see if they stick. You can't throw out stuff and just expect to be believed. This isn't Oregon. This is one of the top media markets in the city. If DeMarco Murray is sitting next to Jeffrey Loria on a plane, do not tell the media it's a coincidence, because it's not a coincidence. He voiced his concerns. He was very upset and took it higher than you. And now, again, Heavy wears the crown. Heavy wears the head that wears the crown, because Chip Kelly took the fall for this, and rightfully so. Is he going to get another job? Oh, you bet he is. You bet he is. Because there are teams out there, college and pro, that would love the innovation, love a change, love something different, a spark. Let's not forget, he went to the playoffs his first year. Let's not forget, his second year they won 10 games and just missed out on the playoffs. But too much, Chip Kelly, was the downfall of the Eagles. You started getting rid of players that were very important to the organization and started bringing in new pieces and tried to convince everybody. And this blew my mind, because I started doubting my own intelligence on this. When he brought in Sam Bradford and tried to tell everybody that Sam Bradford was the answer to what the Eagles needed, I started actually thinking to myself, is he seeing the same Sam Bradford that I was? Is he seeing a different Sam? Because everybody started falling. Hey, Sam Bradford's look. You know, what Sam Bradford really needed was a change of scenery. This is a guy that still can be one of the top quarterbacks in the league. Says nobody. And I started to wonder, am I missing out on something? The great genius that knows more about football than I will ever know was trying to convince me that Sam Bradford, who was often injured, never winning in St. Louis, was going to be the answer to what the Philadelphia Eagles needed. He was the perfect guy to run the offense without Jeremy Maclin, by the way. You know, the Eagles grew stale with Andy Reid. There was no question about that. And the addition of Chip Kelly sparked life into the team. It was different. It looked good. But the one thing about the NFL, you have to give everything time to see if it indeed is going to work. When you are revolutionary, when you are doing things a little different, you have to give it time. Quarterbacks know this better than anybody else on the planet. Think about every single quarterback you've seen in their second start, third start, maybe fourth start, start doing all the things that you thought that they could do. Oh my God, they ran the ball. They know how to read outside the pocket, and they just bring this spark and energy. What happens? Tape, 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 adjustments, adjustments, adjustments. And those same quarterbacks that do so well for the short burst of time and attention that they get come right back down to earth. That's why we say it all the time. Brock Osweiler in Denver, we were talking about this yesterday. Everybody lost their mind. And then after a while, things calmed down a little bit. We do this in baseball, right? Pitcher comes up from the minors, has an exceptional start, his first couple of starts. Of course. Then once batters get used to him, we'll see. Same thing with Chip Kelly. The innovation, the cool stuff, the ability to make Nick Foles one of the better quarterbacks in the game at the time. I mean, he had a 13-1 touchdown to interception ratio. These are unheard of numbers. They weren't going to last. Those were numbers you couldn't count on. Those skewed the bell curve. So what do you do? You have to look at, okay, how does this offense really work? It was too fast. It was, the personnel wasn't there. The execution wasn't there. But this is all on Chip Kelly. So where does Chip Kelly go from here? We'll talk about that later on in the show tonight. Brad Senkiff is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk about the Clemson Tigers. They are unbeaten. They are underdogs in their game against Oklahoma come New Year's Day. New Year's Eve, I should say. At the Orange Bowl. So what about Dabo Swinney and the Tigers? That's coming up at the bottom of the hour. But coming up next, Chris Rock used to have a line in his comedy act that goes very well in today's bowl games. I'll explain next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio, 800-777-2907. Love your thoughts on Chip Kelly and his firing today. But let's go to Kenneth in Houston, wants to talk about the Texans, who are on their, what, 28th quarterback this year? What's up, man?
Hey, Tony, I appreciate you taking my call.
What's on your mind, my friend?
The reason why I was calling is, do you see my Texans making the playoffs?
Of course.
Who do you see them facing, and how do you see them faring?
Well, making the playoffs, I saw this today, and I just had to smile ear to ear, because I'm a big... I loved when I was a kid, and this was before the internet, so this made it really hard to do as a kid. I loved getting the newspaper and the schedule and doing how my team can make the playoffs scenarios. Because I was always, in the 80s with the Steelers, there were years where they would hover around like 9-7, and I would have to play out. Like, they have to win the next two games, or they could go 1-2, but, you know, Houston has to lose, or Cleveland has to lose, or whatever. And so I used to play those scenarios all the time. I'll never forget, and not to avoid your the question, but this just reminded me. I'll never forget in Christmas Eve of 1989, the Steelers were in a position where they needed to win, and they needed a whole bunch of things to go their way. A whole bunch of things, including a Monday night game where the Cincinnati Bengals were playing, I think, the Minnesota Vikings or something like that. Well, they needed a whole bunch of scenarios, and I happened to be at the New York Giants-Oakland Raiders game at the Meadowlands. That was one of the games the Steelers needed to have to go their way. And this was before, again, the internet, so there was no smartphones, there was no access. So you know what I had to do? I had to call. You're probably a little young to remember this, but there used to be like 1-800 numbers you used to call, and that would give you scores, up to the minute scores. And they were gambling lines, you know. They were lines that would pitch you tout services, but they would provide this service, so you'd have to call them. I remember calling every like 10 minutes to get updated scores. To at my grandmother's house for Christmas to see if the Steelers would make the playoffs. So. Back to your Texans thing, I saw this today and I had to smile because the Texans, even if they lose and the Colts win, the Colts need like 8 things to go their way to take advantage of that situation on Sunday. So the Texans aren't locked into a playoff berth, but that's a technicality. It is going to need, they're going to need an avalanche of things to not go their way on Sunday. So they're playing Jacksonville. I think they're going to get into the playoffs. As far as who they'll face, we did a whole thing on the show yesterday about how topsy-turvy the AFC is. But let's just say for kicks, they're the 6th seed in the NFL. The 4th seed by winning the division. Now that's what they're going to be, right? So they'll be the 4th seed in the NFL. 2 wild cards, they're the last division winner, so they're 4th. So I'm assuming that they'll play the 5th wildcard team, which probably is Kansas City at this point. So there would be the opponent. If they should happen to be another, you know, yeah, that's actually, if it would either be Kansas City or Denver. That's the way I'm breaking it down. Because the Jets and the Steelers, I would think, would be the 6th team coming in. I could have it all wrong. We shall see. But I think the Texans are in no matter what.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they'll play either Denver or Kansas City, whoever doesn't win the division.
Because I think even in tie-breaking scenarios, I think those two teams win the tiebreakers over the Jets or Steelers.
Yes, I want to say Kansas City, if Denver wins next week, Kansas City is locked into that 5 seed.
5 seed. So Denver wins, Kansas City will be the 5 seed, and they would travel to Houston, play Houston.
Correct.
Okay. So there you go, Ken. It's the best we can do right now. Which is a pretty good job, Adam. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Chris Rock has a line in his routine about marriage, where he talks about a variety of things if you like to do if you're a married man, and then he would say, "Marriage isn't for you." If you like, beep. Marriage isn't for you. Well, I'm kind of taking a little twist on that because today's bowl games. If you like defense, today wasn't for you. If you like defensive stands, today wasn't for you. But if you liked offense, oh boy, was today fun in the bowl games. Let's start, shall we, with the military bowl in Fort Worth. You want to know what happened there between Cal and Air Force? Ha ha ha! Jared Goff threw not 1, not 2, not 5, 6 touchdown passes for Cal in their win over the Air Force Falcons. Six and 467 yards. But it didn't just end there. Did you happen to catch the Baylor-North Carolina game? It was like defense was illegal. No. If you tackle a player or actually try to stop them from advancing, we're going to throw a 15-yard penalty at you and throw you out of the game. Baylor racked up over 700 yards of offense today in their win against North Carolina. And remember, North Carolina came within a offside field, kickoff, onside kick of possibly upsetting Clemson in the ACC title game. Yet Baylor ran all over him. Johnny Jefferson had 299 yards rushing with three touchdowns. But again, a 700-yard day for the Baylor Bears and seven touchdowns against the Tar Heels. So again, if you like defense, today was not for you. So then if you sat back and went, whew, that's way too much offense for me to handle today. I need to take a break. I need to settle in. Maybe I'll watch a good defensive battle between Texas Tech and LSU. Wrong! LSU's Leonard Fournette, 212 yards on the ground, had four touchdowns, and he caught another for a five-touchdown performance against Texas Tech today, who also put up some pretty good numbers themselves, but were routed by the Tigers. So today was an offensive juggernaut to behold in the bowl games. And a fun day if you like that kind of stuff. My daughter had a soccer practice tonight, and as I was at the soccer practice, there was a TV on in the lounge, and we were sitting in the lounge, me and a couple of other dads, watching Baylor, North Carolina, and it was impressive. I mean impressive what Baylor did. And the one thing about these bowl games you have to at least enjoy, there's a month off, right? And you just do not know at all how this works out. So on the one hand, you think, okay, every team's had a month. So they've had a month to do the paperwork and the scouting and the film work and all the things that you have to do to prepare for a game. Then when they get their kids back for practice, they know exactly what they're supposed to do, how they're, you know, the schemes are supposed to work, et cetera, et cetera. So both of these teams should be really, really prepared. Well, sometimes you get teams that are very, very prepared, and sometimes you get a team that is just flat out rusty. And no one is ever going to admit in a loss which one it is. All coaches are going to admit that they were ready to play. No coach is ever going to admit, yeah, you know what sucked? We were off for 30 days, or we were off for 21 days, and that stinks. We were in a rhythm, and then we were out of a rhythm, so yeah, we can't keep up this pace. We have to kind of continue on. North Carolina looked like a team a little out of sorts, but they weren't a really good defensive team to begin with. Texas Tech, I never thought that they could handle LSU anyway. Boy, the SEC pride certainly came out in Houston for that one. All right, Brad Senkiff, speaking of teams with a lot of rest, the Clemson Tigers. And Oklahoma will be facing off in the Orange Bowl in Miami. Brad Senkiff covers Clemson. We'll get the Tigers' side of things next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. Again, taking a look at our New Year's Eve bowl games, the Orange Bowl down in Miami. It'll be Clemson taking on Oklahoma. Very, very good matchup there. You would expect when you get to the college football playoff. Brad Senkiff joins us from orangeandwhite.com and also Independent Mail covers the Clemson Tigers, the only undefeated team in the college football playoff. How are you, Brad?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
Good. All right. Let's get an idea of how Clemson is dealing with this month off and the pressures of this game. What's the mood of the team as leading up to New Year's Eve?
Well, you know, this is a very confident team. You don't get this far without a lot of confidence. And, you know, these guys have been pretty much focused all year on one thing, and that's just being Clemson. They feel like if they do what they're supposed to do and execute the way they're supposed to execute, then they can beat anybody in the country. And so far, it's obviously worked, the 13-0 heading into this game against Oklahoma. So they feel pretty good. Whether that lasts is hard to say because there are reports that three players are being sent home for failing some drug tests. So that could change the mood of things down here real quickly. Debo Sweeney is going to talk more about it on Wednesday morning. And we'll get the full report on exactly what is going on with that.
Are the three players that were suspended, I know one of them is Deion Kane, are they impact players for this team?
Well, Kane definitely is. I mean, he's one of the most talented receivers on this roster. His loss would change some things scheme-wise. He runs a lot of screens, and he's probably their best deep ball receiver. How much it impacts what they do and how effective they are, I think will depend more on the health of Artavis Scott, who is their best receiver, and Ray McCloud, another talented freshman. Those two guys have had some injury issues. Artavis Scott had his knee worked on, had some meniscus issue that he got cleaned up during the break. We don't know how exactly 100% he will be. He did not have the explosiveness the last four or five games, so it's going to be very important that he gets that back if Clemson wants to survive the loss of Deion Kane.
In terms of Dabo Swinney, I want to get an idea of this coach because he's really blown up on the national scene. The way he runs this team, I hear pizza parties. He seems to be a fun guy. He seems to be a player's guy. Is this an act or is this real? I mean, is this a real guy that is this fun?
Yes, he is. He is. I mean, his players absolutely love playing for him. He's one of those ultimate player coaches that these guys, you know, because he really does, you hear this, he does care about them off the field. You know, you hear guys say that all the time because of that, but he seems to really do that. His players have so much respect for him. You know, no one says a negative thing about this guy on that team. And, you know, he just comes across as he seems. He is who he is. And, you know, a lot of things that people don't see is just how structured he is. And his whole foundation is built around preparation and planning. And that's why Clemson has been so successful five straight years of 10 wins or more. He believes it's because of that structure he gives these kids. These are 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. Structure is a very good thing for these young men. And they respect him for that. And that has, in turn, I believe, helped them play harder for him.
In a state where Steve Spurrier was getting a lot of the national attention, there's Dabo Swinney building something in Clemson. Brad, looking at this team, did you sense that this kind of year was on the horizon, an undefeated season, a number one ranking?
A little bit, yes, because we actually, when we put our preview stuff together back in August, our focus, our theme was playoff, because we thought this team had a chance. We thought they could be good enough to get there. I still didn't pick it. You know, I looked at the roster. I said that, you know, I got to worry about this, this, and this. A lot of defensive players to replace. Continuity on the offensive line. Big question marks. But they've solved most of those questions. And so while I will never get the team to go undefeated, I just think that's not fair to put those expectations on a team. But I thought if things fell right and they got past Louisville and they got past Notre Dame, that having Florida State at home, I thought this team could make a run, and I think after that Notre Dame game is when it really started to kind of sneak in that, yeah, this team could run the table.
In terms of the matchups, that here comes Oklahoma with this incredible air offense, and a lot different than when these two teams met in the Russell Athletics Bowl, but one of the matchups people are liking is Sterling Shepard against Mackenzie Alexander. Give us an idea of how you see that shaping up.
Well, it's going to be a lot different than last year. Sterling Shepard was not healthy. I talked to him the other day. You know, he said he couldn't get off the line of scrimmage. He just didn't have that explosiveness, that quickness. And, you know, he lost that battle. I mean, Mackenzie Alexander absolutely shut him down last year. I don't know if that'll be as much the case this year. Shepard is very healthy. He's one of the best receivers in the country. Mackenzie Alexander is one of the best shutdown corners in the country. So, you know, the thing about Mackenzie is he hasn't played quite at the level that I think some people probably expected this year. He's gotten beat a few times, and he's going to get some good receivers, and he locked down Will Fuller better than anybody else in the country did when they beat Notre Dame. So this will be a very entertaining matchup. I just think it's going to be a little more 50-50 than it was a year ago, and whoever wins that matchup is going to give their team, you know, a leg up in this game.
Obviously, with Mayfield's numbers, it's hard to put him in comparison to other quarterbacks. But I'm trying to get an idea, Brad. Did Clemson this year play any team that had a quarterback similar as like Mayfield, who can run? He was a threat to run. He could scramble, run around the field, throw it across the field if he had to. Was there any quarterback in the ACC or even non-conference that Clemson played similar to what Mayfield does?
Not really. Not in the sense that he does it. I think the closest guy would be Marquise Williams from North Carolina. Now, he doesn't scramble, obviously, as well inside the pocket as Baker Mayfield does. And, you know, Mayfield is almost Johnny Manziel-like, with the way he can elude defenders and get out of the way and throw through, you know, passing lanes. But Williams had that running threat, and he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn for about three quarters against them in the ACC championship game. So they were able to keep him in that pocket and limit him what he could do. You know, I don't think Baker Mayfield is going to be locked into that pocket nearly as much. You know, Clemson likes to blitz. You know, Brent Venables, defensive coordinator, very active, loves to get guys in there, wants to get to the quarterback. But that may play against them a little bit if Mayfield is able to get out of the way and make the play. So they really haven't seen a guy of this caliber, and really I don't think many teams have seen a guy like Baker Mayfield.
Brad Senkiff joins us. OrangeandWhite.com covers the Clemson Tigers, also for the Independent Mail out in Clemson. Brad, in terms of Deshaun Watson, we know the Heisman-like year that he's had. We talked about Baker Mayfield. Give people an idea of the strength of Deshaun Watson.
Well, I compare him to like a point guard in basketball because he can dictate the pace of a game. He can decide who gets the ball. He understands spacing. He really runs the show. I don't think he gets enough credit for the amount of time and effort he has to put into running that offense. Right now, he's extremely hard to defend because he's running the football, and he's getting 100-yard gains. And when he's doing that, it makes it very difficult because you can't spy him. You can't put a spy on him because he's a 70% passer, and he will find the hole. He will recognize it pre-snap, one of his biggest strengths, and he will get rid of the ball into that hole. And he absolutely knows what he's doing in this offense. And I think that's the biggest difference from him early in the year to now is the command that he has. And he trusts every one of his players. I don't know if that was the case early in the year, especially when they lost Mike Williams to a neck injury, his top receiver. I think it took some time for him to fill this offense out, let his knee heal. And now you see the full product. This is what Deshaun Watson was recruited to do. They thought that he would be the kind of quarterback that could take this offense to another level, and I think he's done that.
What kind of defense does Brent Venables have against the run? Because if they're going to throw the ball all over the place, they certainly can run with Pirine. How does Clemson do against the run?
Well, they've been pretty well. They've taken away the run from several teams this year. Clemson's biggest problem is it gives up big plays, and some of those have been in the run game as of late. It's a team that just seems to sometimes, you know, just miss assignments and be out of position. You can't do that against Oklahoma. If that happens, you know, Pirine, Mixon, these guys can take you to the house. And Clemson knows that. And I think the biggest key to stopping the run is going to be the safety. And how much do they have to creep up? Because if they have to use their safety run, the safeties played really well earlier in the year and not as well later in the year, which is some of the reason for the big plays. But if those two safeties, Jayron Kearse and T.J. Green, have to come up more, it's going to set things up for play action, and that's when Oklahoma's really going to hurt Clemson. So Clemson's going to have to do their best to try to keep those two running backs in there, keep them from getting to the outside. I don't know if they can do it consistently enough, though.
In terms of Brad, in terms of being tested, it was those emotional games against Notre Dame and Florida State. Those games were at home. How tested is this? Has this Clemson team been this year?
Extremely tested. I mean, I don't have any doubt that they've been through enough battles, had enough adversity. You know, I mean, 13-0 is 13-0. It doesn't matter where you do it, how you do it. And, you know, these kids have gone through a lot. You know, every football team has if you're still playing at this point for something that matters. And they've been in the spotlight. You know, they were on that national television game against Notre Dame, you know, Florida State, the ACC championship. They're not afraid of this stage. And I think you can see that with the way they talk down here in Miami and just the way that they're presenting themselves. This is a mature team. A lot of young kids on this team, but there's some maturity. Not all of them mature as they, you know, had to get rid of three guys and send them home. But I just think from an emotional standpoint, not much seems to rattle this team. And that reflects Deshaun Watson because that's who he is. He does not get rattled. And I think that the team rallies around him and really takes on the face of this program is Deshaun Watson.
Brad Senkiff again, OrangeandWhite.com. Clemson will be taking on Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl on New Year's Eve, part of the college football playoff. Brad, great talking to you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it as always.
Yeah, no problem. I enjoyed it. Talk to you next time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. On the Clemson Tigers, again, Oklahoma, great matchup there, too. And again, you're going to get these great matchups, but boy, I look at the way, and he touched on it. These two teams played last year in the Russell Athletics Bowl, but this is not the same teams. I mean, this is Baker Mayfield, Deshaun Watson, this is a totally different teams. This is guys who played in it, obviously, but this is now a totally different setting. But the way Mayfield plays is so... You draw it up, and it's like sandlot play sometimes. I mean, he is so good at improvising. He is so good at maximizing things around him. And there isn't anybody that Clemson has played that are like him. So you get pressure. You try to take away receivers. You use Mackenzie Alexander as best you can on Shepard to try to cover that. There's many ways Oklahoma can score. They can run the ball really well. They can throw the ball really well. Maybe it gets to a shootout and it becomes a Mayfield-Watson matchup. I mean, Oklahoma's favored in this game, but at the same time, this Clemson team has found ways to win. They are a fun team to watch. They've got a very smart coach in Dabo Swinney, who kind of walked on this job. He was given an interim job. He earned the job. And again, think about being in a state with South Carolina with Steve Spurrier at the time Spurrier was winning stuff, right? Steve Spurrier had the Gamecocks nationally ranked. They were competing for SEC East titles. They were landing Marcus Lattimore. They were landing Jadeveon Clowney. They were picking up the big recruits in the state. And Sweeney has to go up against that and has slowly built up this team. You could make the case about their conference. People have. Hey, if Clemson was in the SEC, we wouldn't even be talking about them right now. If Clemson was in the Big 12, you wouldn't even be talking about them right now. But 13-0 is 13-0, and this is a fun team to watch. And they are led by a legit quarterback that is not putting up phony numbers. Those are real numbers. Those are good. He is capable of beating this Oklahoma team. 800-777-2907. It is Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. Continue to look at the Eagles, what they're going to do now. They've sent Chip Kelly packing next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, so where does Chip Kelly go from here? Where do the Eagles go from here? After Chip Kelly was fired, not even on Black Monday, they didn't even want to give him the respect of closing out the year. That's how quick they wanted him out of town. Now the natural landing spot, and I heard it all day today, living in the Music City. He should go to Nashville. He should go to the Tennessee Titans. The Titans should pick him up. Not so fast. First of all, I know we lean towards the simple things. We lean to the simple solutions. It's a little kind of like Occam's razor, you know. The simplest answer is the one that's more probable. But just because a kid played for a guy in college, that doesn't mean it works out on another level. And it doesn't mean Marcus Mariota is best served by having his college coach who understands him at the next level. Marcus Mariota can succeed with a bevy of coaches that could come his way. That's not the problem. That's not something the Titans need to resolve. The Titans do not have to go get Chip Kelly because that's a concern they have. You can go get a bunch of coaches and he would do just fine under a bunch of coaches. He did pretty well under Ken Whisenhunt. It was the other things that doomed Ken Whisenhunt. He has had good games under Mike Mularkey, and Mularkey's not sticking around. No. This is not the number one concern for the Tennessee Titans. What is the concern for the Tennessee Titans is this. They are a team that are so deficient in a variety of different positions. They do not have skilled players at key parts of their team. They do not have an offensive line. It is a sieve. They do not have good wide receivers. They do not have a good running game. Oh, Doriel Green Beckham is pretty good. Defensively, they've shown flashes of really good play, but they could use a couple of playmakers. Brian Arakpo had some okay games, but otherwise was pretty absent. This was a bad football team top to bottom. The one thing that is selling tickets, the one thing that is getting people excited for the future is Marcus Mariota and getting his college coach, who is a control freak, even if he has NFL experience now, is not the right answer. Now, naturally, the Titans, because I just said that, and many people will say that, are going to interview him. They will. They'll go check it out. But connecting this dot is too obvious. And we shouldn't always go down that road. Right? I hear this all the time whenever a coaching vacancy is up. Right? Go to the fan base. Go to the message boards. Go to where the fans throw out rumors. Everybody's got a cousin who's got a cousin who's got a buddy who's a real estate agent. And so-and-so's looking for a house. So that must mean they're being hired. It's too easy. I don't know if this is true, but I heard. That's what you hear all the time. Fan bases love to do that. They love to do it on internet message boards. They love to do it in general. But one of the things I also hear when it comes to coaching searches is if a guy even had a cup of coffee at your school for 2 seconds as an assistant coach when he was 21 working for $1,000 a month, he's really interested in returning to that spot. Why, they should call Urban Meyer. After all, he was the wide receiver's assistant coach here back 22 years ago. Oh, yeah, sure. Sure, because I know Urban Meyer must be dying to get back to the school when he was a broke 21-year-old learning the ropes. He must love your town. I'm sure that has everything to do with it. I've heard this kind of stuff a million times. Why, he would love to come back to the alma mater, or why not come back to the place that gave him his start? We hear it all the time. This is something that is just too easy to do, and one of the things that is too easy to do is marry a young rising superstar with his college coach, and that, my friends, is not the answer. The answer is, for the Tennessee Titans, the answer is a guy that can build. A guy like Jacksonville's Gus Bradley, who may not be the best coach on the market, but he's building something there and was patient and has ownership patience to say, this team is lousy and they're going to be lousy for a little bit. And I'm going to try to work some things out and I'm going to try to develop your next rising star quarterback. And I'm going to try to develop a young offense. And if you can get me some good defensive players and in the draft or whatnot, I'll try to groom them, but it's going to be a process, a long process. Jacksonville just gave Gus Bradley another vote of confidence going into his fourth year. They haven't had a winning record in forever. They don't have a winning record now. But he's building something, and ownership is on board with the building process. That's what Tennessee needs. Chip Kelly is not going to go to Tennessee and get them to a 10-6 record. Right? And here's the other thing. If you're building a squad, if you're building a team, if everything is on the table, right? Offensive line, running back, wide receiver, defensive line. If everything is on the table but quarterback, would you really want a guy that's power hungry and needs those kind of GM powers and those kind of stripes? Or do you want the best minds available working to analyze the draft properly, different ideas? A coach has this perspective. GM has this perspective. Owner, not so much, but the idea of getting some minds together to sort of process that whole thing. Where is Chip Kelly in that entire process? So no. I don't think the Tennessee Titans are the obvious land for Chip Kelly because his old college quarterback happens to be residing there. No, I think Chip Kelly needs to step away. There'll be coaching offers. There will be. There just is. These guys don't stay unemployed for very long. He did go 10-6 in his first two seasons with Philadelphia. That does count for something. And maybe he learned a lesson about all this. Maybe he does take a step back during the new year and say, you know what, I'm going to chill a little bit and maybe not be so power hungry and learn to work with people in making decisions and not be willing to upheave everything just because I like change for change's sake. Maybe that's the case and he'll be a better coach for it. But for the Tennessee Titans, no, this isn't going to work. Yahoo Sports Radio.